Hello, everyone, and a very happy Sunday evening. It's good to be here with you all. Tonight, we're going to be starting with a story about an incredible little boy. I read it last week, but then we didn't have time to look at Ramana Maharshi's thoughts about it, so we're going to start over in that same place tonight. And so I thought I would start with a song by a little girl. So this song is called So Much More Than This, and it's by Grace Vanderwaal.
Sit right here, chill out alone. Close your eyes and just let it go. Right next to me, I hear your heartbeat beep when the dial turns up and the music starts playing. We don't rely on society. Doesn't matter how your hair looks or what they are thinking. Just what we're finding. Stop your foot and listen in. Ignore the words, let the music cave in. Close your phone and breathe in the air. You'll soon realize that the song that is so.
So much more than this. It is what it is. And I want to play another song. I just feel like playing one more song, and so I am going to do that. This is Avril Lavigne, Innocence.
Everything is okay. The first time in my life, and now it's so great. Slowing down, I look around and I'm so amazed. I think about the little things that make life great. I wouldn't change a thing about it. This is the best feeling. This innocence is really. Hope that it'll stay. This moment is perfect. Please don't go away. I need you now. And I'll hold on to you.
Two great songs. So it's good to be here with y'all. And I'm going to be reading from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I'm going to be starting on page 53 in the section called Mind Control, about with the story of a boy, 8.5 years old. Let me turn on a light. Sometimes it helps if you can see the words on the page. There we go. Okay, so here's the story of the little boy. A boy of 8.5 years sat in the hall at about 5 p.m. when Sri Bhagavan went up the hill. During his absence, the boy spoke on yoga and Vedanta in pure, simple, and literary Tamil, quoting freely from the sayings of saints and the sacred scriptures. When Sri Bhagavan entered the hall, after nearly 3/4 of an hour, only silence prevailed. For the 20 minutes the boy sat in Sri Bhagavan's presence, he spoke not a word, but was merely gazing at him. Then tears flowed from his eyes. He wiped them with his left hand and soon after left the place, saying that he still awaits self-realization. You know, how mature is that for an 8.5-year-old boy? When I read this story last week, I mentioned that it kind of reminds me of the story of Jesus teaching in the temple at age 12. And of course, we have no idea who this 8.5-year-old boy is, and it's kind of interesting. So we have a devotee asking Ramana Maharshi, how should we explain the extraordinary characteristics of the boy? And Ramana says, the characteristics of his last birth are strong in him. But however strong they may be, they do not manifest themselves save in a calm, still mind. It is within the experience of all that attempts to revive memory sometimes fail, while something flashes into the mind when it is calm and quiet. It is within the experience of all that attempts to revive memory sometimes fail, while something flashes into the mind when it is calm and quiet. I remember Jay saying something like this morning during the weekly gathering. I can't quote Jay exactly, but the idea of what Jay said was something like, the mind can never understand the truth. You know, the mind can't comprehend it. The mind only knows duality. And so therefore, in order to realize truth, we need to still the mind, right? It's when we're not involved in mind, when we let the mind grow quiet, that we get a taste of the truth, right? The mind can't know truth. So when the mind goes quiet, we have the opportunity to know truth. And Ramana Maharshi, it's interesting, there's a question about this boy, and the way Ramana Maharshi responds in the question about the boy is he just says that in order to revive the memory of truth, the mind needs to be quiet. And I don't know that that's a direct comment on the boy, to be honest. It could be a comment to the devotee, right? It could be that the devotee is trying to comprehend with his mind how such a small boy could have had so much clarity, and that Ramana Maharshi is really addressing the devotee, letting him know that he needs to still his mind in order to understand that, rather than commenting that the boy had a noisy mind, right? Of course, we can't know for sure, nor is it important. What's important is to know that his comment applies to all of us. You know, Jay mentioned this morning that for many years he had been on an intellectual journey, right? And I think that that is extremely common for all seekers. I think that most of us begin on an intellectual journey. And we know the intellectual journey has really ended when we're more interested in a quiet mind than learning truth, right? In the beginning, I think that's what we're attempting to do, is learn truth. You know, like we learned mathematics, we learned history. But at some point, we no longer have an interest in learning truth. We don't need it to make sense to the mind anymore, and we just want the mind to be quiet. And at that point, we know that we're not on an intellectual journey anymore. As we lose interest in the mind, the intellectual journey has ended, right? And a genuine journey has begun. As we lose interest in the mind, the intellectual journey has ended, and the genuine journey toward truth has begun. So next, a devotee asks, how can the rebellious mind be made calm and tranquil? And Ramana Maharshi says, either see its source so that it may disappear, or surrender yourself so that it may be struck down. Self-surrender is the same as self-knowledge, and either of them necessarily implies self-control. When he says self-surrender, it's a capital S, but it's the beginning of a sentence, so that may not count. Let's just skip that one. When he says self-knowledge, that is a capital S. And when he says self-control, that's a little s. So self-knowledge is a capital S, self-control is a little s. He says self-surrender is the same as self-knowledge, and either of them necessarily implies self-control. The ego submits only when it recognizes the higher power. So Ramana Maharshi gets a lot of credit for teaching self-inquiry. Some people speak about Ramana Maharshi as if that was really his only teaching. But it has been my experience that actually he taught surrender equally. That he really thought the path of knowledge, and I'll tell you what that is in a moment, the path of knowledge and the path of devotion were equal. The path of knowledge. Knowledge is when you have a direct experience of the self or the truth. And you arrive at that direct experience through self-inquiry and awareness, watching awareness. So each day, if you're practicing awareness, watching awareness, when you go into awareness, watching awareness, and you get those tastes of the awareness that's aware of everything, you're having knowledge of the truth in those moments. Right? When you're aware of the awareness that's aware of everything, you are experiencing self-knowledge. And then self-surrender, as you know, is when you let go of any will that you have and you surrender to the will of the universe. You surrender to what's unfolding as it's unfolding. I was telling Jacqueline the other day, I think it was Jacqueline, yeah, it was, while we were hiking in the crags. I was telling Jacqueline the other day that, you know, I assume that whatever I have is whatever I want, you know, because the universe gave it to me. I don't think about what do I want and then try to attract it. That is not surrender. That's trying to command God. To think about what you want and then to attempt to attract it is to attempt to command God. In surrender, there's no such self-will. Right. And some of you may have been here a couple weeks ago when I had a concern. I was wondering how I would go about getting a letter that I needed from the Levita Town Hall in order to secure our loan and also in order to have a retreat house in Levita. And during that teaching, you may remember that as I was sharing from the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, I realized it's not my work. It's not my work. You know, it's God's work. So whether this happens or doesn't happen, it isn't really my business. Even though this body may be involved in that process, it's really not my work. In that moment, that realization, you might also remember that there was great joy in my heart, right? Great joy in my heart. In that moment of realizing it's not my work, it's not my burden getting this letter, it's not my job getting this letter, right? It's not my work. That was a moment of self-surrender. When we surrender doership. We surrender what we think we want, how we think things should be. Everything related to self-will is let go and surrender. And that is called the path of devotion. So two primary paths, the path of devotion, which is surrender, and the path of knowledge, which is self-inquiry and awareness, watching awareness. And Ramana Maharshi saw those two paths as equal. And interestingly, when I experienced the inner Ramana, which of course was before I really knew Ramana Maharshi, the inner Ramana also taught those same two paths, self-inquiry and surrender, and told me in that book, in those messages, told me that both paths were equal, that really you can awaken on one path or the other, and then told me that as his student, he would recommend both paths for me, which is kind of interesting, recommending both surrender and knowledge, self-inquiry and awareness, watching awareness. So that's kind of interesting, don't you think? I've kind of come to see it as two sides of the same coin. In surrender, you're really letting go of ego. And in self-knowledge, you're getting to know yourself, right? So you're letting go of what you aren't, and you're embracing what you are. And you can see how those two go together really well. Now, in this particular answer, Ramana Maharshi says, self-surrender is the same as self-knowledge. And then he says, and either of them necessarily implies self-control. What he means by that is the ego isn't really keen on either of them, right? I mean, how many of you have learned through your own practice that the ego would rather not practice awareness, watching awareness? It would rather perceive itself as busy, have other things to do, right? It would rather watch TV, play on Facebook, play games on the phone, right? And how many of you, through your own, yeah, I love Kathy's hand. She puts up her hand, me, me, me. She's even waving her hand, me, 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 me. I've experienced that. And how many of you have experienced that the ego doesn't really want surrender? The ego likes my ideas. The ego wants what I want. The ego wants things my way. The ego actually wants the whole world to function in the way I want the whole world to function, right? So the ego is not keen on surrender or knowledge. You know, I've heard in the past, I've heard people say things like, you pick the path that's easiest for you, right? And I'm scratching my head right now. That leaves me scratching my head because I don't really think there is such a thing. I think that any path you pick, whether it's self-knowledge, surrender, or something different, the ego's going to resist. I think what happens really is that if you learn to tune into guidance, you'll be guided to a path, or maybe even a dual path, like I was guided to a dual path, both surrender and knowledge. And then, as Ramana Maharshi says here, you need to exercise enough self-control that you follow the path you were guided to, because it's not easy, right? Because the ego isn't, oh boy, oh goody, right? The ego is going to resist. So you have to have enough self-control to follow that path. What I also find, and some of you guys I'm sure have this same experience, is that on the days when you are resisting, or in the moments when you are resisting your path, if you go ahead and choose it anyway, in spite of the resistance, at some point, you know, it could be after a little bit of time, but at some point, having made that choice feels really, really, really good. And I think what happens as we make the choice more and more, and we become more aware of how good it feels to choose our path, the path becomes easier because we start to realize this is what I want. Again, it's like I told Jacqueline on the hike, I assume that whatever the universe gives me is what I wanted, even if I didn't know I want it, right? Well, it's the same thing with your guidance. It's not that you, with your intellectual mind, pick surrender or knowledge or some other path because you think you'll like it. It's that the guidance knows what's best for you. The guidance knows what fills your heart with joy. The guidance knows what will cause you to fall in love with the spiritual path and give you great excitement, right? And so if you follow the guidance, whatever path or paths you are guided to, then you will feel really good when you make those choices. Guidance knew that. And you learn by how good you feel that this is what you wanted, even though you didn't know it intellectually, right? You know, the greatest obstacle, obviously, to spiritual awakening is the intellect. So why would we trust the intellect in what we want, even regarding a preferred spiritual path, right? It just doesn't make any sense to trust the obstacle to pick the spiritual path. Only through guidance can you know what path is best for you. So whether you like awareness watching awareness or not, or whether you like surrender or not, is really irrelevant, because that which is liking or disliking is the judgmental ego. The question is, what is your guidance? And again, like I said, my guidance was clearly both the dual path of surrender and self-knowledge. And again, they both take some self-control until you learn that you love what you've been given as your spiritual path. Next, a devotee asks, how can I escape from samsara, which seems to be the real cause for making the mind restless? Is not renunciation an effective means to realize tranquility of the mind? And so, of course, samsara is the bondage of life, death, and rebirth. The bondage of life, death, and rebirth, being caught in that cycle of reincarnation. How can I escape from samsara, which seems to be the real cause for making the mind restless? Is not renunciation an effective means to realize tranquility of mind? And Ramana Maharshi answers, samsara is only in your mind. The world does not speak out saying, here I am, the world. If it did so, it would be ever there, making its presence felt by you even in your sleep. Since, however, it is not there in sleep, it is impermanent. Being impermanent, it lacks substance. Having no reality apart from the true self, it is easily subdued by the true self. The true self alone is permanent. Renunciation is the non-identification of the self with the not-self. When the ignorance which identifies the self with not-self is removed, not-self ceases to exist. And that is true renunciation. I remember the first time I don't remember extra specifically, I remember generally. The first time I taught what I'm about to say, and it was probably back in ACIM Gather, and you know, a lot of course students that were just course students were around. And I remember somebody getting very, very upset, and the upset words, the words that they used were something like, God can't make a mistake. God can't make a mistake. You know, those are such interesting words. I mean, because when you say God can't make a mistake, you have to ask, what is God? And you have to ask, what is a mistake? And without clarity on what God is, and without clarity on what a mistake is, you can't really make a statement like God can't make a mistake, or God can make a mistake. What Ramana Maharshi says here is that renunciation is the non-identification of the self with the not-self. Renunciation is the non-identification of the self with the not-self. Now, the self is the language that Ramana Maharshi uses, but what he is referring to when he uses the word self is what others refer to when they use the word God. It's the same thing, if you will. So we could say renunciation is the non-identification of God with the not-self. The not-self, of course, another word that we use for that is ego. So this sentence could say, renunciation is the non-identification of God with the ego. Now, if renunciation is the non-identification of God with the ego, doesn't that mean that God is identified with the ego? So what is God? What is self? And are we going to get offended? Say that again. Yeah, I'll say that again, Kathy. So if renunciation is the non-identification of the self or God with the not-self or ego, in order for renunciation to be needed, that means that God would have to be identified with the ego. Otherwise, there would be nothing to renunciate, right? Now, again, if God is just a concept for us, and we have our imagination of what God is, well, that could sound like a very offensive statement, which is why the person in ACIM Gather got upset, right? God does not make a mistake. God does not identify with the ego. But what is God, really? What is the self, really? It's life awareness. That's what it is, really. Life awareness. And it's what you are. It's what you are. Not someday will be or once upon a time was, but what you are. It's what you are. Now, does it sound ridiculous to say that you have identified with the ego? And we'll call the ego thought. Does it sound ridiculous to say that you have identified with thought, and renunciation is the non-identification of you from thought, right? It doesn't sound ridiculous, does it? You see, you, the self, God, awareness, are the same thing. You, the you that misidentifies with the ego, the you that misidentifies with the body, personality, mind, the you that misidentifies with thought and emotion and world is God. So, whether that's a mistake or not would be a judgment. Right? It's just what is. It's just what is. It's what has occurred. And so renunciation is the reversal of that occurrence. Renunciation is the non-identification of you, of self, of God, with the ego, with thought and emotion, with body, mind, personality. You see, the only reason one would get upset at the idea that God could have identified with the ego is if God is a concept that I have decided is perfect in my definition of perfect, and doesn't make mistakes in my definition of what is and is not a mistake. But if I just look at myself, none of this intellectual stuff about what God is and what a mistake is, if I just look at myself, I can see that there is an attraction to thought, an attraction to believing I'm the body, mind, personality, and I can understand that renunciation is the reversal of that attachment, then there's nothing to get upset about, is there? It is actually just a fact. Simple, clear fact. A lot of people think of renunciation, of course, as giving up material items, in some cases giving up certain types of food or practically giving up food altogether, giving up sex, giving up money. And Ramana Maharshi's teaching has always been that if that's the way your life is going to go, we could use the word karma or script, if that's the way your life is going to go, that's the way your life is going to go. You know, if your life is going to go in the way of physical renunciation or sexual renunciation, monetary renunciation, well, that's just the way it's going to go. But that has nothing to do with self-realization. That's still world story stuff. The true renunciation is breaking the attachment between awareness and mind. Losing interest in the mind. That's the way Inner Ramana words it. That's true renunciation, and that's the only renunciation that actually leads to self-realization. None of those other renunciations do. They may or may not occur as a part of your script, but they have nothing to do with self-realization. So again, asking about birth and death and reincarnation, which is called samsara. Ramana Maharshi says, samsara is only in your mind. The world does not speak out saying, here I am, the world. If it did so, it would be ever there, making its presence felt by you even in your sleep. Since, however, it is not there in sleep, it is impermanent. Being impermanent, it lacks substance. So, the devotee thought that the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth was the cause of an agitated mind. And Ramana Maharshi is saying there is no truth. There is no substance to birth, death, and rebirth, just as there is no substance to the world. Therefore, they are not the cause of an agitated mind. In fact, it would be more likely to say an agitated mind is the cause of that experience, right? Those experiences are not the cause of an agitated mind. He says, having no reality apart from the self, it is easily subdued by the self. Since the self, or consciousness, is the cause of every material experience, every manifestation, the manifestation does not affect the self. The self and its believing attention affects the manifestation, right? So the self then that is awakening to itself and is beginning to realize the truth and can focus on awareness, focus on surrender, quiet the mind. These ideas of things like a world and birth and death and rebirth, these ideas are all going to fade away. You okay, Jamie? Let me know if you need help, my love. Her legs are beginning to fail. She just now tried to get up from her bed and couldn't. But I think she has just surrendered and decided to stay in her bed a little longer. You need any help, sweet pea? She's like, how do I get out of this bed? Okay, I think she's just going to lay there a little longer. She's half in, half out. Oh, there she goes. She's trying again. Do you need help? Oh, you did it. Woohoo, good girl. Woohoo. Well, that was hard getting out of bed. Girl, I know. Well, now you're going to get right back in after all that trouble getting out. That's funny. Cheryl is saying, channeling our focus on no thinking, awareness, watching awareness is not identification. From what Ramana just said, both awareness, watching awareness, and surrender, both would count as non-identification. Basically, it's not believing your thoughts, not believing the world, not believing your emotions, right? That's non-identification. where believing the world, believing your thoughts, believing your emotions is identification. And the interesting thing about that, I'd like to point out, she uses the word channeling our focus on no thinking, right? But when we say not being identified with your thoughts, your emotions, your perception, right? Oh, PETS, P-E-T, very cute. Very cute, Kathy. Ooh, I like that. I like, because it is kind of like our pet, isn't it? We give it so much attention. That's brilliant. I don't know. Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, so perceptions, emotions, and thoughts, pets. So this doesn't say necessarily, and in fact, Ramana has made it clear before, the pets don't necessarily go away. The perceptions, emotions, and thoughts don't necessarily go away. We saw a few weeks ago where he said that, you know, when you're self-realized, your mind may be relatively quiet or not. Or not. Right? So you could be self-realized and there could still be a lot of thoughts that go through that mind. But it's the non-identification with the thoughts. It's about the not believing of the thoughts. The not, you may still experience emotions, but it's about the not believing the emotions. You'll still perceive a world, but it's about not believing the world. Not being affected by it, not being all caught up in it. That is renunciation or non-identification. So having no reality apart from the self, it is easily subdued by the self. The self alone is permanent. And again, what is the self? You are. I mean, that's the most important thing of all to realize. You are. I noticed that Cheryl is saying awareness, and that's a correct answer. I don't want to say it's incorrect, but it's not the point I want to make right now. I want y'all to accept that you are the self. You are God. You are the awareness that has misidentified with thought and manifestation. Therefore, you are the self that can break that identification by having more interest in yourself than thought or personal will. You are the one. You know, I think sometimes on this spiritual path, in fact, I think probably all the time for all of us at some time, I think we're seeking God or truth or self as if it's something other than me. And it's not. Oh my God, I remember when I used to hear spiritual teachers say that and it drove me crazy. When they'd say, you are that which you seek, but it's the truth. I remember when I interviewed Elie Ruzdahr. I've had realizations since that interview that did not exist during that interview. And there was one thing that she and I discussed. At that time, I was practicing the question, what is truth? What is truth? I was practicing that. And I mentioned that to Elie Ruzdahr, and she said that the better question was, what am I? And I remember thinking, that's not the better question. I really did. I thought that. Yeah, I don't even know. It might have come out somehow in the universe. That's not a better question. It's just a different question. You know, I like what is truth, personally. I was wrong. I was wrong. Who am I or what am I is the supreme question. Because even in the question, what is truth? And I think she helped me to see this even during the interview now. Truth, I could be thinking, is something other than me. Right? What is truth? I could still be thinking that truth is something I have to discover, or I have to learn, or I have to earn, or I have to obtain. And you see there's still a separation there. But when I start genuinely asking the question, what am I? And at least in my case, it took a while before I really even understood those three simple words, what am I? But when I start genuinely asking the question, what am I? There is a realization that I am what I seek. That I am the truth. I am God. I am awareness. I am life. And I have misidentified with thought and body and emotion and world. And I want to renunciate that misidentification and re-realize or remember myself as I am. You see? So sometimes the way we answer these questions, and again, awareness is a perfectly good answer. I don't mean to pick on Cheryl. But sometimes when we answer these questions, we're still looking at it as if it's something not me. Like, I'm the one trying to realize awareness, or I'm the one trying to realize truth, right? It's not me. And somehow I still got to get it. And we aren't realizing that we are simply, I want to renounce that identification, Jacqueline says. Yeah, we are simply that one that has misidentified. We are already that one, presently misidentifying, and all we have to do is renounce that identification. There's nothing else to realize. There's nothing to gain. It's all about a letting go. There's absolutely nothing to gain. Right? You already are that which you seek. You see how simple it is? But there is a misidentification that needs to be renounced. That's true. There is a letting go. That's true. But there's nothing to gain. It's a losing, not a gaining. Most people don't set out to try and lose. You know, the ego always wants to gain. But this is a losing, not a gaining. It's a losing of all the extra stuff that we picked up and identified with and thought is me and thought is true. We need to lose all of that. Which is why we call it an undoing. Or an unlearning. Right? Yeah, Jacqueline says, the first time I've wanted to be a loser. Yeah. Yeah, and there's a TV show, right? The Biggest Loser. Of course, that's a show about losing weight, but The Biggest Loser wins. Same thing on the spiritual path. The Biggest Loser wins. Right? That's all. Say, I want to be the biggest loser. Of course, we do want us all to be the biggest loser. It's not really a competition. We want that for everyone. We want to be the big loser. Yeah. All right, so the next question. Oh, wait, no, I want to read another sentence from this answer that I haven't read yet. So renunciation, as we know, is the non-identification of the self with the not-self. And then Ramana Maharshi says, when the ignorance which identifies the self with the not-self is removed. I'll read the rest of the sentence in a moment. When the ignorance, which identifies the self with the not self is removed, the root of the word ignorance is ignore. When we are looking out at thought and emotion and world, we are ignoring the self. So in other words, what Ramana Maharshi is saying is when the outward focused attention which identifies the self with the not-self is removed. When the outward focused attention, that is ignorance. That is how you, as God, as the true self, have misidentified with thought, emotion, and world. Outward focused attention. That is how you, as God and the true self, which are the same thing, that is how you, as God and the true self, has misidentified with thought and body and world, is outward focused attention. Outward focused attention is misidentification. Renunciation then would be inward focused attention. And you can see if you practice surrender or awareness, watching awareness, or self-inquiry, you can see how they are all inward focused attention. That's what they have in common. So, when the ignorance or the outward focused attention, which identifies the self with the not self, is removed, then the not self ceases to exist, and that is true renunciation, or we also call that self-realization. So, next, the devotee asks, can we not perform actions without attachment, even in the absence of such renunciation? Can we not perform actions without attachment, even in the absence of such renunciation? So the way I hear that question is, can't I be not attached and still have outward focused attention? That's the way I hear that. Can I have outward focused attention but not attached? Okay, and Ramana Maharshi says, an Atma Jnani alone can be good at karma yogi. So an Atma Jnani, I think that's going to be a self-realized person, but let's look it up. Yeah, it is. A self-realized person alone is going to be be a good karma yogi. And a karma yogi is someone who is involved in their script in a selfless way. Involved in their script in a perfectly selfless way. So what he's really saying is there is a self, I'm going to call it a self-realized karma, even though there really is no such thing. I just don't know how else to say this. There is a self-realized karma, a script for a self-realized person that would appear to be very involved in the world, from outward appearances, but in reality, on the inside, there's peace and silence and not doing. You know, there's not doing, even though a lot of doing appears to be going on. He is saying, however, if you are still outward focused and you're trying to practice the same type of selfless action, that it's not really going to occur, because if the ego is still there, the ego is going to get involved. And that makes perfect sense, right? If the ego is still there, the ego is going to get involved. So if you are not self-realized, instead of trying to be outward focused without attachment, which you're going to trip up, you're going to trip over that. Instead of trying to be outward focused without attachment, he's saying it's better to be inward focused. For example, surrender. And in fact, that's probably why, as my inner teacher, he recommended surrender as a part of my path, because I am highly active. That is my script, right? If you guys saw how I move from one thing to another, you would understand there's very little time for doing nothing. Now, I take that time first in the morning, but once my feet hit the ground, you know, I'm running till pretty much time to go to bed. So I do have a very active script. And so instead of teaching me to be outward focused on everything I'm doing without attachment, I was taught to be inward focused through surrender. You see? What am I to do now? And you can see how surrender would be a necessary practice for an aspirant with a very active life. Otherwise, the ego is just going to remain fully engaged. See, it makes perfect sense. Everything always makes perfect sense when it's looked at carefully. So again, Ramana is telling him that only a self-realized person could be outward focused without any false self involved, perfectly selfless. Only a self-realized person could do that. So those of us who are not self-realized need to find a way of living in the world in a way that's inward focused. Because if we go out, we're going to get tripped up by the ego. We have to stay in, even if our lives are busy. The next question, does Bhagavan condemn Dvaita philosophy? I don't know what Dvaita philosophy is. Let's see if that's in here. Yep, it's the teaching of dualism. Dvaita is the teaching of dualism. So does Bhagavan condemn the teaching of dualism? Ramana Maharshi says, Dvaita can subsist only when you identify the self with the not-self. Advaita is non-identification. So dualism can subsist only when you identify the self with the not-self. And notice, who does the identifying? You! Right? Dvaita or duality can subsist only when you identify the self with the not-self. You see? You see? You! You are the self, therefore you are the one identifying the self with the not-self. Whether it's a mistake or not, I don't know, but it's what is. And it's what needs to be undone if we want to realize who we are, right? Advaita is the non-identification. Right? The non-identification. Okay, so I have 3 minutes left and I want to play a song. It kind of popped into my mind about 10 minutes ago that I wanted to play it. Didn't think I would have time. Now I think I do, at least play part of it. Here we go.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. If nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Along the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud, but nobody ever hears him for the sound it fears to make, and he never seems to notice what the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round.
Top of the hour, so I'm going to turn that down. But I thought of that when we were talking about being the big loser, right? The fool on the hill. Not gaining, but losing. That's what made me think of that song. Okay, so I'll see you guys next week. That was the end of that section on mind control. So we'll start a new section next week. And, yeah, I'll see you Tuesday, too. All right, bye.